Well, welcome everyone. Welcome to the technical committee. We have waiting in Queenstown, John Glover, who's going to speak to us about issues with Kinloch Road shortly. But we've just got some issues to deal with until we prior to getting to the public forum item number six. So there are no apologies. Moving on to a leave of absence, there are no leaves of absence that have been requested. Appropriate staff are in attendance. Confirmation of the agenda. No, Councillor Lawton.
Can we bring the report forward so that
it's the first report and it's part of the GM's.
Sorry.
That's right. Okay. No. That's all good. John, you can hear us okay there.
Yes, I can hear you fine.
Cool. So conflicts of interest, just the same reminder, when we need to stand aside, if that's an issue, a conflict. So public forum. John, we're in your hands. So just a couple of parameters around for you just to be aware of. Obviously, you're speaking more than for just yourself, speaking for the Kinloch community and also the Glenorchy Community Association. So, you know, basically under standing orders, you've got 10 minutes. But what I suggest is that you deliver on what you'd like to speak to us. We have received your submission, so we have that in writing in front of us. So we're essentially in your hands. And then when we complete, I'll just have to remind you, is there anything else that you need to, any messages you need to leave with us when you conclude? Because you won't have another opportunity when we get into the actual report, the general manager's report, which highlights this particular issue that you're going to talk about. So we're in your hands, John.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman and councillors, and thanks for arranging the video link from Queenstown. As you say, it's a good drive down to Dunedin. And I trust you all had the opportunity to read the notes that I've prepared and circulated, and in particular point 7 on page 1, where we're asking council to set a specific policy. I'd like to use the public forum just to reiterate a couple of key points. And although we've had sporadic flooding on the Kinloch Road in the past, each moderate rainfall since the big storm in March has closed our road and done so for increasing length of time, the last being a 10-day period. So we urgently need to remove the day-to-day uncertainty around access along the Kinloch Road, so that when the Mosgiel or Otago Tramping Clubs come and visit, they won't be faced with abandoning their trip to the Capel simply because it's raining and they can't get there. Or to give a recent example, so a group of 5 Otago students don't nearly get washed away late at night, require emergency accommodation, have to abandon their vehicle, rely on the goodwill of a passing jet boat to take them to Glenorchy so they can get transport somehow back to Dunedin in time for exams, and then to work out how to return, retrieve their vehicle and belongings 10 days later when the road reopens. Or simply to ensure that when my wife and children return home in the evening following after-school activities on a dark and rough night, we don't have to push the boundaries of safe operations in our boat because the road is closed and the only other alternative is an expensive hotel room in Queenstown. So that's the situation that we're facing at the moment, but we need to be able to remove that day-to-day uncertainty. We want the ORC to recognise the wider community benefit of the road, which is used by ratepayers from across the whole of Otago. There are significant economic impacts and benefits around the existence of the road, and there'll be significant financial impacts and detriments to local residents, employers and businesses should the road be abandoned. The Greenstone Valley is of great cultural significance to Ngāi, and we would expect their very early involvement in the formulation of any policy, strategy or adopted position that has the potential to affect continued access by road to that area. We're one region and we all share the benefits of continued access along this road, and we should share the costs accordingly. This is the same philosophy that led to all the Kinloch ratepayers contributing to the ORC's Dunedin Stadium special rate over the years. And I suspect that if I stood in the octagon and you gave me $5 for every passerby who agreed that some of their regional council rates should protect infrastructure used by everyone in the region, and I gave you $5 for each person that disagreed, I would soon be a wealthy man. But in summary, the economic, recreational and cultural benefits arising from the continued existence of this road are significant. And although I understand why a figure is included in the officer's report, it's wholly inappropriate to exclude, it's wholly inappropriate to include in the report a rating take figure that does not include at the least contributions from the adjoining major landowners, the local Glenorchy and the wider Queenstown communities. Rather than looking for reasons not to preserve this access, we need councillors to step up and start by recognising, on the record, the benefits of the access, then task staff to identify how that can be preserved, and then devise the strategy to work towards the outcome. Mr. Chairman, that's all I would like to say in the public forum. Obviously, if you have any questions or if the councillors have questions, I'll do my best to answer them.
Thank you very much, John. Firstly, I'm just going to ask Dr. Palmer just to make a couple of comments, but with the short-term remedial, let's call it a project, having that in mind just for a moment, and there's some additional funding that has been approved over the next 3 years, so I'll just get Dr. Palmer to talk about that, and also just to cover off the strategic focus for the longer-term issues to be dealt with. So,
what do we do that during the paper?
Oh, did you not want to just? Okay. I'll. As Dr. Palmer said, it should really be done when we deal with the paper. But essentially, there's $50,000 per year that's been added to the budget. That's starting from 1 July of this
last year.
So we're in year two of that, John. And obviously, the strategic focus has been floating around for some time with key stakeholders, obviously Queenstown Lakes District as well. But look, I'll just open it up for questions and just check with the committee whether they have any questions for John, Councillor Laws, then Councillor Bell, then Councillor Lawton. Councillor Laws.
Sorry, you can't see me, John. Hello, it's probably a rare privilege for you not to see me. But nevertheless, here I am. This is my hand.
Yeah, very good.
Nice to meet you. Ella and I came and saw you, I think, last year at some time.
Yes.
And we saw the nature of the problem. And the idea was then that the ORC would look after the channel and stop the channel coming onto the road, and the QLDC would look after the road. Has the channel encroached, broken its particular channel and come close to the road? Is that what's occurring here?
It is. And there were some works done. There was $40,000 spent on basically building a big sandcastle across the mouth of a channel, and it washed away when the first time we had a big rain, so because it was just gravel. And we more recently had the large flood event in March removed some bank, which has left exposed, if you like, an old channel that runs now from the river to the road. And the issue is for the Queenstown Lakes District Council that even if they do try to fix up the road, it washes away because they're unable to do much in the river channel.
Thank you.
Councillor Bell.
Yeah, John, just a couple of questions. One was just really wanting to know whether you knew the date of the Dart Bridge when it was built, because that just gives me an idea when I had to stop going over the boat with old Harry Bryant to Kinloch before the bridge was built, go shearing up there at Winborne. But do you know the date when that bridge was built?
72.
1974, I believe it opened.
I thought that would be the case. The other thing is, John, can you tell me your knowledge, local knowledge, of the availability of hard rock for the abutments, stop the gravel getting eroded away and things like that? It would be mostly over on the Glenorchy side, would it not?
No, there's a significant amount available from Rootburn Station, who won't surprise you to hear that have offered it for free, because they see it as being one way that they'll still be able to access the other half their farm down at Greenstone. So in the area around Scott's Creek, there's quite a lot of rock there. That has been used in the past to rock armour the couple of sections that have been rock armoured by Queensland Lakes District Council.
Thank you.
Councillor Lawton.
Yes, just about.
Just about. I'll try and talk a little bit louder. In terms of some of the points that you've made about the strategic importance of the road, it is a challenging situation. What would happen if the road wasn't reopened? What would end up happening for Kinloch?
Well, yes, Kinloch would wither away. The people that have properties there would doubtless end up abandoning them. There's no boat access into Kinloch because the mouth of the Dart River has moved forward. And so the historic wharf, the heritage listed wharf at Kinloch, is no longer accessible by boat. And so that would be the result for the residents of Kinloch. But obviously you have a couple of farms, a couple of stations that are served by the road. You've got Woodbine Station, and then you have Greenstone Elphin Bay Station, which is heavily dependent on that road. And then you have the Tairoa hiking trail and the interconnectivity between the Rootburn and Greenstone tracks. So the issues for Kinloch wouldn't be great, and the wider detriment would be quite significant.
Councillor Kempton.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. John, the road which has been washed away, is it conceivable, or rather that you're having difficulty with, is it conceivable to realign the road on an alignment which actually doesn't get impacted by the river at all? Now, I know that it might be expensive. I've got no idea where it might be. I just want to know if it's possible.
Yes, you need to realign about a 7-kilometre stretch of the road, and that would just be moved over to the base of the hill at the edge of the valley. And that would obviously require some engineering and a few bridges, but that could be an option.
Thank you.
John, I was just wondering, have you actually cited the report that's in front of us today?
Yes, I have.
Okay.
So, and I think what's prompted me to come here today. Because there's a subliminal message that comes from the report, but also meeting the staff over the years on the ground, has been that there's almost a collective, this is too difficult, it's a natural process. I've been told a couple of times it's the ORC's job just to make sure that the water can get into the lake, and it's not their issue with the road. And so the concern is that it's been put in the too difficult basket. It's been written off by staff, and we'll have a strategy which is basically just written to justify that decision. And that's been very open, and that's my perception of the engagement we've had to date.
Okay, I can assure you that's not our position. Councillor Scott.
That's why I've asked you to state a position, which would be great.
Well, I think we're about to debate our position, aren't we, Mr. Chair? Just from my own understanding, the road to the Rootburn, that's all good, and bridges and everything.
Yep.
It's just the Kinloch section.
It's between the Dart Bridge and Kinloch.
Yeah.
The section between Kinloch and Greenstone is fine, but obviously can't be serviced or maintained without access along the bit between the Dart Bridge and Kinloch.
And you talked about boat access to Kinloch. I mean, why couldn't you just relocate the wharf that's currently at Kinloch?
Yep, and we're working with Civil Defence, the Harbour Master and Queensland Lakes District Council to come up with an alternative location for a pontoon wharf. That would probably be about a kilometre down the lake, so it's still serviceable. But obviously, it would be a poor replacement for road access. We're looking at it as a means of providing contingency and resilience in the case of an event where we do see a total loss of the road. But it's very much that you're not going to be able to get the cattle out of Greenstone Station or the fertiliser in on a small pontoon wharf.
Okay. Hey, thank you.
Excellent, John. Look, thank you very much. Any final comment you'd like to make in light of the inability for you to take part in when we actually discuss the item on the agenda?
No, I mean, I just hope that we can convey to the councillors the wider and strategic importance of that road, we'll report back your deliberations back to the community.
Excellent. Thank you very much. And once again, apologies for the delay in linking up with you. Thank you. So moving on, there are no presentations. Confirmation of the minutes from the 1st of May 2019. Councillor Lawton, are you happy to move? Move. Seconded by Councillor Hope. Any discussion? If not, I'll put the motion. All those in favour, please say aye.
Aye.
Against, carried. Moving on to actions. The first couple with regards to Lake Hayes are complete. The Lake Snow is still in progress. Any update there? Well, I've just got the report, so we'll deal with that then. Everyone's comfortable with that? Okay, moving on to item 10.1, which is the General Manager's Operations Report. Welcome, John Luke, and just John Luke, sorry. So I will move that we receive the report, signal by Councillor Lawton, and we'll just work our way through the items. We take it as read. South Dunedin and Harbourside Geotechnical Drilling. Any comments, questions? Comfortable? Councillor Hope?
I just have a question either for Dr. Palmer or Jean-Luc, please. You've got the ORC telemetered in that area, in that basin, but you've got also, around the corner of Fryop Street, you've still got seawater and things like that right down. Do you anticipate that you'll be putting more of that telemetric round the harbour to gauge it, or are you just going to concentrate solely on your Forbury, your St. Clair, your Tainui? Will you go down to Tomahawk? Will you move down that way to Tomahawk or not, or is that far too, getting up too high as topography lies?
Yeah, for the moment, there's no plan to add more telemetered site on the other side. Really, the focus is the South Dunedin and Harbour side, north of the, what we call for the moment, South Dunedin Urban.
Jean-Luc, are you comfortable? You've got three sites there. Would you like to do more?
For the moment, that's the recommendation we had from groundwater and geologists about, it's always better to have more, but I think with that, that's a good balance between, spending money to get more data and being able to have enough data to make a conclusion and decision on that. So for the moment, I'm happy with that kind of coverage of sites. One thing to note, so we've got the telemetric sites that record water level, groundwater level, and basically we can access that through the web, real time. But all the other sites got piezometer, so we'll be recording water level. The only thing is we're going to go on a regular basis once a month and download this data. So we're still measuring groundwater levels in the area, although it's not telemetric sites.
So if I could just add to that, the telemetry is the real-time look on website, see what's happening now. But as Dr. Payan says, every other site has continuous measurement.
Thank you.
Okay. Councillor Deacon.
Yes, it might be too early to ask this, but is there any information coming in from the piezometer work that would be of interest to us? Do we know anything yet from those devices having been inserted into the ground?
Yeah, for the moment, not with the groundwater level. We need more time. But what we've learned already with the drilling, just the fact that we drill holes, is that the bedrock is shallower than what we expected, and the material collected from the drilling confirmed the type of material we were expecting. So it's the bedrock, basically the initial conclusion or observation was bedrock shallower than what we thought. However, the sediment composition is similar to what we were expecting in this area.
That's interesting. So, for example, in that St Kilda well, bedrock completed on the map, the one just east of Richardson Street, how far down was the bedrock?
I just have to look to my notes. So usually so bedrock usually was found between 14 and 16 meter, and the exception is Tonga Park, where we had to go to 18.
And what did you expect?
The initial investigation based on assumption and geophysics was more indicating something around 70 meter. 70. Yeah.
70.
Yeah.
Wow.
So that's a an unexpected outcome, first outcome of the drilling.
Other queries? Okay, I'm gonna, okay, Councillor Scott.
Sorry, and so what are the implications of that?
For the moment, that's being analysed, what this means, to have a shallower bedrock.
Okay, I'm in a bit of a dilemma because Mr. Newman told me that, is it Hugo Borger who has another commitment at 4:30, and he's the Lake Snow expert? Do it now?
Yep.
Okay. Well, we're going to just have to, Mr. Glover's just going to have to park where he is at the moment. So, Hugo, would you like to come to the table? And we'll just go to Lake Snow, because there could well be some questions on Lake Snow. And then we'll go back to the Dart Reese. Okay. Welcome, Hugo. Councillors, queries, questions? We're dealing with Lake Snow and Lake Dunstan. Councillor Laws.
Okay, first question. Where are we in terms of progressing the Lake Snow issue? Have we got an up-to-date report on that? I'm sorry, I don't have my... It's technical. So we were meeting, where are we in terms of getting expert commentary in terms of combating Lake Snow in general?
It's probably a question for Dr. Palmer. Sorry. He is too. Got me there. The GM for Science now has got, have you got a comment, Mr. Newman?
The issue from recollection, and Sarah, you correct me if I'm wrong, is that there has been a discussion amongst the regional sector about Lake Snow.
No. So I consulted with the regional CEs about, because Lake Snow is not just our issue now, it's been found in other places, about whether or not they would have an appetite for collaborating on further research. There hasn't been any great expression from the other CEs of a desire to do that. But I can further raise that issue again. And, I think taking it perhaps to the biomanagers would be another angle to take on that.
Dr. Palmer.
Yes, through you, Mr. Chair. As Mrs. Gardner and I have spoken with this, and we think that... it would be appropriate for me to raise that with the biomanagers group that I referred to before, dealing with other issues of biosecurity and getting some buy-in there to a collaborative research effort. If that's not achieved, then we'll need to think about going it alone with our own research program, but I can report back after that meeting in a couple of weeks' time.
Thank you.
The reason I ask this question is if you go to actions of page 3, the bottom it's been 8 months since that, so we really haven't made a lot of progress, have we? And really, we were making a lot of progress at one stage. We were gathering expert science commentary. We were having workshops. We were, it looked like, leading the show. And now it looks like it's fallen off the agenda, and I don't want that to occur. So we need to get back on the horse again.
Okay. Hugo, is there anything that you can share with us that's currently on your radar with regards to Lake Snow?
What I know is that it's...
Maybe turn your microphone on, please.
I think it's on. No.
Here.
That's it.
Thank you.
So we're sitting with our chief executive because all the planned research that we've had was kind of on hold, everything. Like, we've got all the results that we were expecting, and it's been reported to you guys. You've had the workshops. But then ever since, I don't think we didn't add anything to it. However, I do agree that we should continue investigating, and I know that it is a financial issue, who is going to fund that. But Lake Snow is still very poorly understood, and we just don't know why it's growing our lakes, what the reason, if nutrients is related to it. So there are many research questions that need to be addressed if we want to know more about it. That's all I can say about it.
Okay, so cover that, Dr. Palmer.
Yes, Mr. Chairman, so I think given the passage of time, I will report back to next committee after the biomanagers meeting to report back on the appetite for a joint research program, and then we'll be in a position to know whether collaboration is feasible or whether we should push on alone or with a small number of other people on our research program. So I think a report back to next committee round would be appropriate.
Thank you. Councillor Scott.
Okay. I mean, what's the implications of Lake Snow being found in Lake Dunstan for the first time? You know, yes, that's my first question. And my second question is a bit bizarre, but a fishing guide said to me, as Lake Snow's increased, the number of fish in Lake Wanaka's decreased. Now, is there any relationship there? So the first one is, what's the implication of Lake...
Yep.
So should we be concerned?
So the issues that we're going to have with Lake Snow in Lake Dunstan, which is the same water body, because it's downstream of Wanaka, Hawea.
Yeah.
So it's the same as what we have right now with the other lakes, you know. If you're using for water supply, you can clog filters. Those are the problems. And that's how it's been found, because CODC was doing this pilot study on these new techniques on filtration systems, and they realized that they found in the filters the cells of Lindavia in it, yeah. And that's how they found, and they're thinking of new technologies that they can invest on that Lake Snow will not cause a problem on them. So the implications will be the same as what we are having right now, you know, so it's just...
But it may impact on Cromwell a bit more than it has previously.
Oh, yeah.
Possibly, yeah. Possibly. Like, just like finding new ways, new technologies, you know, like to water supply.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And this fishing story that...
With the fishing story, I cannot comment on it because I don't have any data to support it, you know, like...
Have you heard of it?
We don't monitor fish in the lake, so I can't really back these up or... Yeah, sorry.
Okay, Councillor Laws.
Okay. Let's just pass over the fact that we haven't made any progress in the last 8 months. And we have collectively dropped the ball, and I take responsibility for that as well. Now that it's in Lake Dunstan, it's pretty clear that it's spreading, and it will continue to do so. The reason why this is on the paper, I think, is because there was an ODT report about a month ago where the mayor of Central Otago District Council pointed out that there would be millions of dollars in increase in terms of water supply into their new district water supply to screen out all the gunk so that they could have an effective new water supply into Alexandra and various locations. And so there is now for the Queensland Lakes District Council and the Central Otago District Council a direct economic consequence from lake snow being found in those water bodies.
Question.
I guess the question, well, it's sort of leading towards a resolution. I'm actually thinking that I can't be bothered waiting for central government to do something, and if you are waiting, you'll wait as long as it's going to wait to get Wilding Conifers proper funding for that. We've got three councils, us, Queenstown Lakes and Central Otago District Council, Andrew, that are now facing consequences directly from Lake Snow, and I think we might reasonably collaborate with them in the first instance and with other councils that are also experiencing. What do we know? It's in Benmore? So Mackenzie, is that Mackenzie? Waitaki? Yeah.
It's throughout New Zealand.
Yes, right. But nobody's doing anything, Michael.
Well, we haven't quite got to the end of that road yet.
Dr. Palmer has alluded to the fact of having a discussion with the biomanagers forum, and then the possibility of some joint program.
That's pretty. I mean, I think this needs to be picked up and elevated to a political level, because if we're going to leave it at a bureaucratic level, it can easily get stymied, and in the end, it's still going to require a political decision. Stephen, I'm going to ask you as chairman: can't we elevate this to a political issue? Can't we actually approach the minister with the ORC playing the lead to ask them for the direct intervention of the appropriate authorities? Mr. Park is very interested in the Manuhirikia. Perhaps he could be very interested in this much more direct threat to our environment.
Councillor Woodhead.
There's been some work done by an expert workshops. I think there's been two of them, Dr. Palmer, and there was some. Is there some follow-up research to be done on what are the triggers around this diatom? Am I correct there?
Yeah, there was further research around fundamentals, like how do you measure it, what causes it to generate the mucus, what causes it to not, that kind of thing. It was recognised research is of relevance and interest to a number of regions, and that's why it was elevated to the chief executives to get a commitment amongst regional councils to collaborate on a research program that was of interest and benefit to many.
So, Mr. Chairman, in response to Councillor Laws, we're talking about a diatom. And it's been in Lake Dunstan for ages because it would be flowing down the Clutha system ever since it's been in Wanaka, I would have thought. What are we going to actually do? There's no... councils extracting water from these water bodies are going to have to adapt, either develop new technologies or find other water sources or move their bores or whatever. We had a conversation the other day with the Mayor of Queenstown Lakes about this very topic, and it is expensive.
Yes, it is.
But we're talking about a minute diatom that is all through our water bodies.
I'm sorry, but I'm not going to throw up my hands and go, I surrender. Aren't we going to work out how we can combat this environmental pest?
What I suggest is we work our way through the report. If Councillor Laws, do you want to work on a motion that will direct the governance arm to... Do something via the chair.
Sure.
The chair of the regional council.
Thank you.
Is that okay?
Well, I mean, I'd like, with the consent of my colleagues, for us to contact or to write directly to the Minister for the Environment and seek to upgrade research into the Lake Snow issue with an aim towards finding effective solutions.
Could you write that down for Liz, please? Michael, and I'll go to the next question, which was over here on the left somewhere. There wasn't a question. Everyone's got Councillor Robinson.
I was just going to say it's probably a biosecurity issue rather than Environment Minister, but okay, you could start there. Given that it's a national incursion, and really, is it something that this council does alone? It's very broad now, and agree, it's a diatom, which is a microscopic organism encased in glass, the same as Didymo. Same thing, was a biosecurity issue. Very, very difficult to control when it's widespread throughout New Zealand and microscopic. Controlling these things, when they're in very, very iconic, important waterways. But yes, understanding them, great. But for us to invest the amount of money required to do that, we could maybe be a partner, but not sole responsibility, and is a biosecurity issue.
I feel that Council Laws is promoting the idea of continuing the conversation, that we don't lose sight of the problem. Obviously, our constituents continue to raise it. I see it rather than a solution, rather continuing the conversation at a higher level. It may or may not resolve in any greater commitment than this council's made already. But, Councillor Scott.
It would be good to build upon the work that's already happened. And my understanding is we've got a strategy. We mightn't agree with it, but it'd be interesting to know what it is. And, I mean, Dr. Palmer, there are various actions that have been agreed, or is the reality we're doing nothing? Or what is happening at this particular point of time with regards to Lake Snow? Is it nothing or is it something?
We've had the answer to that already. It's the bio managers are about to discuss it.
That's not an answer. I mean, do you know what...
Dr. Palmer.
Ms. Ozan's in the room. She might better update on where we've got to with aspects of the research program. It had got to was there was a program of prioritised research which had very specific outcomes. It was sequenced in a very logical way.
Yeah.
It was agreed to by the experts. The second workshop was attended by a number of regional councils who also bought into it. So that's where it got to.
Yeah, so we need some feedback at some point on that, which is possibly what you're suggesting. Where to from here, bearing in mind that we would like to do something about it, not just write reports about it.
With respect, that has all happened. We've already had the feedback from that. We had a detailed report on where the scientists got to.
We have.
It was agreed then, because of a national issue, the CEOs of all the regional councils would talk about developing a national approach. RC has told us that has gone nowhere. So the next stage was for the biomanagers to get together and say, what can we do in terms of pooling our resources, doing some joint research on this? That's where it seems to be at. Let's stop traversing old ground.
Okay, yeah. Apologies.
Thank you, Councillor Deacon. So by the sound of that, if we were to wait until Dr. Palmer reports back on the progress with the biomanagers, and Mr. Newman, no doubt, with his science team behind him, will provide any other additional relevant information for Dr. Palmer to present to us, and then we'll think about the next step at that point in time. You've still got a resolution you want
I do, and push. And can I tell you the reason why I'd float it? And, Michael, that's the reason that I'd have it going too. The reason
I'm going to second your resolution.
Yeah, thank you.
I think that's good.
Yeah, because the reason I want to elevate it to the next level is because the moment that it sits on a minister's office, on a piece of official letterhead, they've got to respond. And I want to elevate it to that level so that we can get an official understanding and that we are making them aware. If we leave it to, with all due respect to Gavin and his bureaucratic colleagues, we've got no guarantee of what's going to happen next, and we've got no guarantee it'll ever permeate itself up the ministerial table. And it's going to require central government intervention in some way, shape or form for us to find some form of collective solution.
Councillor Bell.
Yeah, I through you, Mr. Chairman, I want to agree with Council Laws. We shouldn't surrender, and we should go political with it, and we need to talk to ECAN, Dearest to Say, because Ben Moore and Rua Tafania are also in the same predicament as we are.
Every regional council.
Every regional council might be, but whatever we need to do is we need to gain that political confidence of being able to go there and get it on the minister's table.
Okay. So when we...
So I'll second the motion.
Okay, right. Okay. So when we deal with noting
Michael,
the...
Michael, move it.
Yeah?
Michael,
I'll certainly move it.
Are you good to deal with it? Actually, what we'll do is we'll deal with it at the end of this item when we note the report, and we'll deal with that additional motion. Okay. So, Lake Snow, complete. Okay, moving on. We'll go back to the DART, Maurice. Thank you very much, Hugo.
Only lost his picture.
I think he may have gone. Okay. Now, Dr. Palmer, do you want to just elaborate on where the discussions...
I just saw them. I thought they switched off a camera, so you didn't see him.
Okay.
He gone?
I suspect he's still there.
Okay, got it. So, could
the lady came into the Queenstown office and got a remote out and turned it off and muted it. So,
okay, so
he's off.
He's been.
So we could well be still connected. Okay. Dr. Palmer, do you want to just elaborate or just update the committee on any discussions that you've had or your staff have had or Mr. Newman's staff or whoever? It's probably an operational matter, that first one, and then the more strategic view as well, where that's at for the longer term. So short term, where are we at? And the longer term focus, please.
So... over a year ago, in the course of developing the present long-term plan, Council made the decision to take two actions in respect of Kinloch. The first was to provide an extra $150,000 over that three-year period of the current LTP, $50,000 per annum, for what we're calling short-term immediate engineering works to do with river management that would complement works undertaken by QLDC in respect of the road. And so we've done that. We have actually undertaken works. As noted in our report, we've spent about $35,000 so far on engineering works, and we will continue to do that. Dr. Payan attended a meeting with Queenstown Lakes District Council in Queenstown last Friday, and so they are working through together the detail around the further short-term river interventions that need to take place, and taking a wider consideration than just placing armour. There are some other possibilities there which are being explored. So that's what Council has done and is continuing to do in terms of short-term works. The second decision Council made in adopting the LTP was to take a very strategic approach to the whole delta, because the roading issue to Kinloch is part of a much larger problem to do with the whole delta. Issues not just about the river, but about the hazard setting, other hazards, the effects of future climate change, the fact that the delta, as you would expect, is rising and prograding out into the lake and is affecting Glen Orchy and not just the road to Kinloch. So Council agreed to undertake a two-year strategic planning exercise jointly with other stakeholders starting on the 1st of July this year. And so we're actually ahead of that. We've already started some scoping and preparatory technical work on that. And we're meeting with Queenstown Lakes District Council in about a week's time to kick off the formal engagement with QLDC on the scope and the process of developing that long-term adaptation plan.
Excellent. Thank you, Dr. Palmer. Questions, queries? Is there a requirement that we need to move any additional motion? You've heard from Dr. Palmer. What's actually happening, the collaboration work, etc. Comments? Councillor Lawton.
Thank you. Great to hear that we are going to continue to work with the Glen Orchy and Kinloch community, because from what I understand to this point is that we haven't been able to give them very straight answers, and I guess that's been part of the frustration, is that they don't feel that they've had the communication. So it was really good to hear an answer that's pretty straight out there of we will continue to maintain. So do we need any more funding, or will there be enough in the remaining 20,000 over the next 2 years? I would have thought 20,000 went very far. If so, there's a contingency plan until we've got another plan of some alternative or the same. But at the moment, there isn't a policy necessarily. So I'm just checking that we are going to do what we say we're going to do, which is to maintain to current service levels.
Yeah, and just can we have clarification around the Wakatipu River Management special rating district, because obviously that's where the funding is coming from, is that correct?
That's correct. The funding comes out of the Wakatipu special rating district. We have six of them across the region. The relevant one here is the Wakatipu one. We spend about $172,000 a year on river management in the district as a whole, and $50,000 of that is the additional funding we that council approved for specifically to do with Kinloch Road. It is very difficult to know with any certainty as to whether that is enough. We have to see as we go. We do have reserves that we can dip into. I think we just need to see how it goes. I don't think we can say we will always do engineering works. I can't make a commitment that we will have an unlimited supply of money to, for our part, try and manipulate the river. So at the moment, we have enough funding. It's a technically very complex matter, but for the moment, we are committed to looking at ways of partially managing the river margin in that location. But there could be, as Mr. Glover said, there's 7 kilometres of river on that part of the delta and tens more kilometres of road that are also exposed. You know, it really is affecting the Glenorchy side as well. The whole delta is rising. So, you know, in time, it's potentially subsumed by the delta, which is why the long-term plan is really, really important to answer questions such as, is the road in the right place? And the other things that go with development on the delta as a whole.
Okay, so as proposed in point 7 of Ms. Glover's document, would there be value in ORC creating a policy around what happens in the short term?
I think a policy decision is unnecessary because our policy in respect of these matters where we have rivers intersecting with infrastructure owned by other agencies is to collaborate with them on the best overall solution. And so examples of that are Roxburgh. We were collaborating with the NZTA in respect of the four creeks that come off the face and in our parts. So we collaborate there. We've collaborated with them on the Makero Range, Pipson Creek. We collaborate with DCC on the Dundas Bridge where we've got a flood issue and a transport issue. So it all works fine. And so I don't think there's any further decisions to be made by council at this point in time. We've made a funding provision. We're committed to spending the money in a sensible way on short-term works. We'll keep council updated as to the financial position of the rating district. And then we will progress the strategy with QLDC and other stakeholders and also keep you updated on that.
Great, thank you. It'd be really good to keep the Glenorchy Community Association in the loop. They're obviously immediately affected whenever anything happens. So.
Thank you for asking the question about the policy, whether we need an extra one. Councillor Laws, and then Councillor Hope.
Sorry. If I misread or interpreted something, I interpreted we had $50,000 spent for work to do in the channel. It's failed. We've got $20,000 left. Plainly, any work that we do is going to require more capital expenditure. Have I got that right?
Well, my understanding is that you've got your larger Wakatipu River Management Fund and the ability for staff to prioritise work as required, depending on, you know, how nature delivers, you know, whatever we've got in front of us in terms of challenges trying to maintain structures, etc. I don't think the 50,000 is ring fenced, and when that money's gone, there's no money left. Is that correct or not?
Yeah, look, we've got 172,000 across the Wakatipu Rating District.
So you could spend $172,000 on it.
No, because we have other priorities as well across Wakatipu. But we upped it by $50,000 in recognition that we had had another problem to address in the short term. And it's an operational issue. We're not doing capital work. So, you know, it's the kind of things like channel realignment, planting, that sort of thing is what we have in mind.
Councillor Scott.
Yeah, just in reply to Councillor Law's point that he said $50,000 has failed. It's maintenance. You know, it goes for a period of time in a very challenging environment, and at some point it's all spent, and you have to keep spending it. It's ongoing maintenance. And what the issue is, I think, from what I can understand, if you really wanted to structurally change it with capital works, you could have, like they mentioned, 7 kilometres or something, you know, like...
Hmm.
It's a big...
You just need to keep the water in the channel, right?
that's going to require capital works. You see, the problem was that they put the money, they put the, as our witness said, or as our submitter today, they put the money to keep, they tried to keep the water in the channel. But it got washed away because it wasn't hard fill. It was shingle built up. We saw it, didn't we, Alan? And so what's happened is they've had a flood down there and bang, it's all gone. And now that's why the road's threatened. And you can do it again and waste your money, or you can think, how can we keep that water in the channel, or how do we in actual fact protect that road with something that's hard?
Okay, my understanding, Dr. Palmer's told us before that there is works that are planned in collaboration with Queenstown Lakes that will essentially, Queenstown Lakes District Council, that will essentially complement the roading works. So we're aligning what we're doing, we're aligning up with the road works. That's my understanding.
Yes, if I could just refer the committee to figure 4, page 9 of your agenda. There's a photograph there showing the dark river. And there are different ways of dealing with this technically, and so the one that the staff are working through at the moment is one of diverting, encouraging the active channel, which is now up against Kinloch Road in the sort of centre of the photograph, more to the left of the photograph through planting, moving gravel around. I mean, that's the preferred option as compared to constructing hard defences next to the road, or reinstating the historic bund. So those options are being worked through. They are, we would call them maintenance type activities, until we have a strategy for whether and what form different sorts of engineering structures or interventions might look like for the Delta as a whole.
Councillor Deakin.
Paragraph 14 seems to be the key one, exactly what Dr. Palmer has just been talking about. Developing this strategic approach with QLDC, who are the road owners. If you want to waste ratepayers' money flushing it down a toilet, you'd put more and more temporary works in there. And I doubt very much that even rock-hardened buns would survive a good fresh down the Dart and the Reese. It would be bowled out into the lake just like everything else has been. So let's put our strength and put our betting on the strategic approach and not try to pour cash down a river, especially a big surging river like that. Complete waste of money.
From a governance point of view, we should steer clear of design by committee as well. Leave it to the experts.
Yeah, we're all good engineers.
So any other comments, questions? Councillor Hope, then Councillor Woodhead. Councillor Hope.
I was just going to say before, I picked up from Mr. Glover what he said was, if he's cut off, and I'm right too, he was talking about you can't get into, was it Glenorchy as well, coming up through the through the lake, the harbour part there is gone as well. Was that the other bit I picked up on too?
No, just Kinloch
Wharf.
Kinloch Wharf has gone, sorry. Okay, so that's your other thing too, and then does that money that they were talking about before that you've got, that river management, does that get utilised into that too? Or is that separate again? I was just trying to work out where the money can go to or can't go to.
So,
you can take it from one end of the pinch from another? Or?
Yes, sir, Mr. Chairman. So the $172,000 is for the Wakatipu part of Queenstown Lakes District.
What they're trying to do is they're trying to keep it.
That's the budget. Mm-hmm. But in terms of where you actually spend it, it's very much driven by events and what happens closer to the time of spend. So when the $172,000 is determined, there's a sense of where the planned maintenance ought to take place and acknowledgement that there are some rivers that are a bit more dynamic than others and are more likely to need works than others, but the actual specifics depend on the circumstances. We won't automatically cap this at $50,000. But then again, there might be other rivers that are perhaps more deserving of the money. But we'll see how it goes.
Okay. Thank you. Councillor Woodhead and Councillor Lawton, and then we'll wrap it up.
We've all also heard from a landowner down there who was making a plea for the longer-term strategic approach. So let's get on with that. There are multiple hazards here affecting Glenorchy and this whole river delta, and we need to be thinking long-term and strategically. And there'll be some difficult decisions.
Thank you. Councillor Lawton.
Councillor Baker, one of the concerns that Mr. Glover had was that we had a predetermined response to this. He wanted us to come back with evidence. It takes 10 years to grow new trees. The rock armour that was in place previously did survive the last flood. So let's not write this off too quickly and not have a predetermined case and actually do the work, and that's what he was asking for.
Okay. Moving on to the next item, flood hazard of Manuhirikia River at Ofa.
Oh, I didn't know that they'd had a flood.
And now this was the result of the flood 2008, November 2018, I should say. And
oh, that's the one that went down the river.
Dr. Palmer, was any comment you wanted to make, or John Luke?
Just committee asked for an update on the matter, and this is an update for you.
And it's been read. Take it as read. It's been dealt with. No comments. Everyone's comfortable. Councillor Bell.
Yeah, no, I just want to say that what's been written down here in this report makes sense to me.
Keep on taking.
And I've suggested to Gavin that when he's going through that way again, he may wish to have a yarn to Sam Lisk and some of the locals there with regards to that, because what he's stated here is the long-term plan that they're looking for too.
Excellent.
And that temporary works that has been done is a bit like the dart. It's just gravel there and it might get washed away eventually, but for $14,000, it's giving a sense of security to that area for whenever, however long that lasts. So $14,000 is not a lot of money, but it has been spent there also.
Thank you to yourself, Councillor Bell, for following that up with the landowner and Dr. Palmer and his team. Moving on to the Brass Knocker Stock Truck Effluent Disposal Facility, up and running. And photograph
like
there that tells you.
Make a comment there, Mr. Chairman, is that it does amuse me quite a bit there where it says in 28, on page 16 there, where the transport operator emptied out
Ray's Junction.
At Ray's Junction, about 20 minutes away from that effluent station. I would like Lisa and the girls to be here to actually know just how effective their standing stock arrangement is, if that is the case, because it's been about another hour and a bit since they're emptying it out again from the same truck, supposedly, by what's reported in this report. So that tells you that we need to be making the government aware that they need to change the rules, and that we should be policing the situation. As I said earlier on, I noticed one particular trucking company from Winton, I'll say where it comes from, I won't name the people, but they're a pack of cowboys by the look of them, by the state of their trucks with all the dung that's on them, have been just leakaging out all over the road. But that is telling you the way that our farming community that are shifting those cows are not emptying out their stock at the required time. So there's been no note of success from our media people, so to speak. So we need to go to the political part again, and we need to be driving it, and we need to be getting the law changed so that the police and everybody else are pulling up these people for not doing the job properly. Simple as that.
Thank you, Councillor Bell. Any further comments? Councillor Scott?
Just as a matter of interest, Gavin, when you look at that picture there in the truck and it going all over the effluent going all over the concrete instead of through the grating, does there need some lines on the asphalt or something to direct the truck? It just doesn't seem to be that good. Bearing in mind we were going to put this in front of a subdivision in Cromwell.
That's because the truck drivers are lazy, so it's not the way that they're emptying out their trucks.
Not anymore.
Is there something that it needs to just improve?
Look at that mess and the smell.
Well, my question is there some way of managing it a little bit better so all the effluent goes into the grate? Just an operational. I'll keep out of it.
Is it fit for purpose?
Well, it just doesn't look like it's. We can do better than that.
Well, you could argue the truck driver should have been right smack bang in the middle of that.
Well, maybe it needs some white lines or something. No. I don't know.
You don't need a comment. Right, no other comments there?
Comments all been crazy,
we'll go back to the noting of the report, the general manager's report, and there's an additional motion which I'll just ask Liz to read out. Moved by Councillor Law, seconded by Councillor Bell.
I moved it.
Councillor Deaker, seconded by Councillor Bell. Liz.
All right, so, sorry, a couple of words I couldn't quite read.
I hope
writes to the Ministers of Biosecurity and the Environment with the aim of seeking a direct... This is where I can't read it.
I see.
I should have not read the word.
You should have. A direct government response.
Government response
and
leading research.
Chief Executive.
I wonder if there's a third minister that you might include, which is Minister Mahuta.
Oh, local government.
From a three waters perspective.
Yeah, good idea. So it's just add local government as well. Biosecurity, environment, and local government.
Okay. I'll put these separately. The first one is that we receive the report.
Yep.
I'll put the motion. All those in favour, please say aye.
Aye.
Against, carried. And the second one is regarding to writing to the three ministers asking for a response and input with regards to Lake Snow. I'll put that motion as well. All those in favour, please say aye.
Aye.
Against, carried. Thank you very much, everyone. Moving on to the next item, which is the Glenhoo Forestry. I think this is Rachel's.
It's good to see you.
Yeah.
Can you catch me?
Mm-hmm.
40% though, catchment clearance. So they need to take that on board.
Yeah.
A couple of stages.
Yeah.
Thank you, Rachel, for your report. Thank you, Rachel, for your report. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you.
Is there anything that you wanted to highlight?
Only a few acknowledgements to Sarah Major and Christina Bright at the University of Otago, to Langhare Research for the actual flow station set up, and to the hydro team who had a particularly difficult job with the turbidity meters.
Okay. Questions? Councillor Kempton, then Councillor Scott, then Councillor Woodhead.
Yes, just a quick one here. Now, my understanding of this project was that, what we're talking about here is sediment associated with tussock catchment versus forested catchment and harvesting. I had a weird idea in the back of my mind that also some of the objectives were around water yield from afforestation versus tussock. That isn't talked about here, but is that correct? Is really the question I'm asking.
I think that's probably the point. The yields are different, so the runoff rates are different. So the expectation was that you get a lot more sediment in the forestry catchment, in the forested or harvested catchment, than the tussock catchment. But that wasn't the main point. The main point of the report was to look at the 6A implementation rules and to see whether we met those.
Yeah, it'd be really nice to, maybe I can find out some other way, but that's fine. I understand why you wrote the report. Thank you.
Councillor Scott.
Good report. Thank you very much. So it seems to me in this example here, you've shown and provided an example of good practice where the sediment rules have been made when in this particular instance they staggered the harvesting. The harvesting, I think, was 40% or something like this. So that's great. I think that's good feedback to the forestry industry. What's the next step? Like, if you went and did 80%, you know, would that achieve good practice?
It's been done. The whole lot's been done now.
The whole lot's been done, yeah.
So the first report, which I referenced, was 40%.
Yes.
And now the whole lot's done.
The whole lot's done, yep. And did that meet the...
Yes. Yes, it did. Bearing in mind that...
But it was still done in stages, so...
Yes,
it was. Still done in stages, as yes. opposed to 80% in one hit, or some of them will do 100% in one hit.
Yep. Yeah,
but you've given an indication that these numbers can be achieved.
I have when best practice is followed, and I think I mentioned in the report that it was very stable lithology. So how it works in other catchments, we don't know from this particular project, but it is achievable.
Thank you.
And you did highlight the undulating country rather than perhaps being more steep and challenging from a removal point of view. you did highlight that as well. Yep. Okay, Councillor Woodhead.
So, yeah, that was part of the point I was going to make. So this is this catchment on this soil type, but it's certainly a good result. Gives us an understanding of best practice, can get us pretty close to 6A limits. One, sediment is a big challenge for the forestry sector. My question is, what are we going to do with these results? Are we going to are we going to link them with best practice and communicate to the forestry sector? Are we going to, you know, communicate this out so they understand the expectations of best practice?
Good question.
Councillor Deacon.
I made that comment before about going to the Southern Wood Council
yes.
Awards dinner. I think this report should go to Grant Hodgson.
Dobson.
Mm-hmm. Whatever.
It's City Forest.
Who's the chair of that organisation,
mm-hmm.
For him to disseminate across its members. Because as I said before, they seemed to me to be very enthusiastic about sediment management in their harvesting procedures. And I think you'd find this interesting, useful and positive, and be willing to share it with their membership right across Otago.
So is it appropriate words that the report is circulated to the Southern Wood Council?
Okay.
Thank you. Councillor Laws.
Well, I was going to follow up, because I was thinking what you were thinking, Stephen, what are we going to do with this? Does it inform our policy making in terms of the policy, A, that we place upon forest plantations and their clearance? B, how typical is this? In other words, for the forestry plantations across the Otago region, would we regard this as normal, or is this unique? If we were to set objectives against it, would the forestry industry push back and say, yeah, that's not quite what we're dealing with here, mate?
Rachel.
Well, I think that this report refers particularly to Glendu, which
yeah.
is quite a an easy contour sort of forestry site,
right.
as I said, with stable lithology. So, and they were extraordinary in terms of their management practices. So I think the only comment we could make is that it is possible, but it would be more challenging on more difficult sites and different soil types.
Brilliant.
With regard to, you know, what percentage of forestry in Otago is on different sites, I don't know.
And practice over the years has generally been the less productive, steep, gnarly pieces
right.
of land that aren't fit for stock.
Oh, no, not for the
prices. Or traditional pastoral farming. Have gone into trees.
That's right.
Any other queries or questions? We've agreed that we'll circulate the report to Southern Wood Council. Everyone's comfortable?
Oh.
Councillor Scott.
Just make the comment that this is an example of a 6A limit that's actually...
being met.
Can be met.
Yeah, but for the same reason.
Yep, we should be celebrating.
Okay.
So I'll move recommendation one and two, which will also include circulating it to the Southern Wood Council, seconded by Councillor Lawton. Any discussion? If not, I'll put the motion. All those in favour, please say aye.
Aye.
Against, carried. Thank you very, very much. Moving on to, we should be celebrating with this one as well. Rachel, this is another one of your reports, the Catchment Monitoring Program. Just so pleasing to see so much good work happening out there in these catchments, and obviously the plan to expand the program into Central Otago in the next year or two. But Rachel, was something you wanted to add or make comment on any aspect of the report?
No, well, I mean, once again, the report's in front of you, so I'm assuming everybody's read it. But, acknowledgements, and particularly important are the environmental field officers who do an extraordinary good work in the field and talking to all the community groups and the farmers and landholders and so on. They're invaluable. And again, the hydro team for the logistics that they have to deal with the varying parameters, sites and so on, and on a weekly basis, it seems. So I just wanted to highlight that we had a really good team at ORC working on this project.
And I think also those relationships that are developed with key members of the community as well goes a long way to sort of, I suppose, building trust between this organisation and the people actually on the ground working on the land.
That's right. The catchment and community leaders were absolutely on board and very engaged. Yeah. And the other thing is, I mean, the whole catchment programme was really a look at how we're doing with implementing 6A again in terms of Schedule 15-16. And we chose irrigated catchments in this instance. So all the catchments we looked at were irrigated.
One query on page 25, the graph at the top, or figure 3. Trying to understand the numbers down either side.
Yep.
Can you just elaborate, just so I get my head around what that graph is saying, what's telling us?
So that's turbidity.
Yep.
So on the left-hand side, it's turbidity in MTU units, and on the right-hand side, it's rainfall, daily rainfall.
Excellent.
So that's the rainfall coming down from the top?
Yes.
Okay.
Which shows us it's influencing the turbidity.
Yep. Sure. Mm. Thank you. Any other queries, questions, Councillor Scott?
Yeah, on page 27, figure 3, it says OSC Community Water Quality website. I actually tried to find this on our website.
You can't, it's hidden.
Yeah.
Community.
That's E. coli there. Yeah, yes.
It was set up particularly for. Because we didn't know what the results were going to be like. Yeah. And we certainly didn't want the whole world to be looking at them if it turned out to be such a terrible, terrible thing. So the website was set up for all the people who were part of the project, so they had access to it. And if you'd known about it, then you could have had access to it. But it was just an easy way for them to look at their results as they came in. Without being terrified that they'd have the...
Yeah,
that's good.
Mm. Yeah. And this is just one catchment. So, like, in the future, in the next year's time, are we expecting all catchments to, you know, how are we going to scale this up?
That's a really good question.
Yeah. My thoughts are, how are the catchments going to go once ORC aren't involved anymore? Mm. So we're stopping in these 5 catchments at the end of this month. So June of last month that ORC involved in these catchments. So it'll be quite interesting to see whether any of the groups that are set up carry on.
Well, Mr. Chairman, I was going through the back of my mind, and Rachel's just reinforced it, that maybe this paper should go to Lisa Glogue and Shay Bain at Communications, because they're reviewing the Eco Fund right now. We've had a year of that, and we've been very enthusiastic in the Eco Fund about supporting catchment groups in their communities to do this kind of stuff. So if there is a catchment group that needs some start-up money or some admin money, they should be directed in that area.
Yeah, would you like to just include that in the motion, that it's circulated to the comms team?
Yeah, I think so.
I haven't had the question answered yet.
Councillor Scott.
Well, how are we going to scale this up?
Well, I think my reaction was simply that it's a deeper issue, really, fundamentally. So, without overdoing it, as the ORC team starts to focus on FMU processes, it's going to need its science monitoring program in well ahead of time into each of those FMUs, and that's a big issue. It's a substantially bigger issue than simply running a state of environment monitoring process. So that's what's on my mind, which comes to how much core data collection analysis does ORC need to resource and manage so that it can run its planning and policy development processes correctly, frankly, in a progressive way that's well planned, well ahead of time. That's the really big question. And then within reason, yes, it's great. I mean, I think it's great that you get community groups involved in this sort of stuff, because they can own the results and they understand the implications. But you've got to, Rachel's dead right, is that sustainable? One, and then secondly, if it isn't or it is sustainable, how does it fit it into the whole framework of data management, collection, analysis for OIC? So it's quite a big question, actually.
So are you saying that 6A is going to become a subset, going to be potentially driven along by the FMU and this whole new water plan?
Absolutely. So look, the reality is that, you know, without putting too broad a point on it, the FMU plan process will overtake 6A.
Yes.
So 6A is going to be replaced by FMU plans across the FMUs. And what you're going
to overtake it? Well, it's going to encompass it.
Well, it is going to encompass it, but it'll progress beyond it.
Yeah, good.
Councillor Scott, my view. And so there's a big question, which sort of Sarah and I are just having the odd chat about now, which is how do we set the organisation up to do that properly, particularly in the science and data collection area.
I've spoken with Xandra about this. I've also spoken with a couple of other staff in relevant areas recently about, you know, strategically what we have to look at is the data we already have, the data we collect as part of SOE monitoring, and the data needs we have for the work ahead of us, and map that, and then understand where we're going to need to put our efforts over the next little while.
Good. Okay. Councillor Robertson.
Yeah, thank you. Just quickly, a really helpful report. I like the words, show the science, show the problem. That's really crucial, isn't it? And we all will have experienced where that's made all the difference. And yeah, and then it got me thinking exactly the same questions about how we're going to do that across the region. And next year we're going to be focusing in the Upper Clutha area, and actually, is that our priority at this time? I'm not sure. It's an urban water quality issue, and we're hearing that it's not our priority at the moment, so why are we doing that one, to be honest? And also, looking at what are we gathering this for? So, yeah, we've got regulatory. So as well as developing policy, which is really good, we do need to have a lot more science feeding into that. We're actually in a doing phase as well. So we actually need to be gathering science for implementation of 6A at the same time as well. So in our priority catchments for water quality issues right now, we need to be prioritising them so we understand them for actually doing something too. So there's that. And then there's the non-regulatory as well, which we haven't had the discussion on either, which is what is the council going to do to support catchments and catchment groups going forward? And what does non-regulatory involvement look like as well with science? So, yeah, you're saying the same thing, essentially. it's a big picture, it is a substantial issue, and we need to talk about that. But don't lose sight of what are we going to do with catchment groups. We've been asking for that for a while, too.
Thank you. No further discussion. Someone like to move those two motions? Move by Councillor Hope, second by Councillor Lawton. And can I just add that we pass on our thanks to the field liaison staff and any other relevant staff that have actually made this catchment monitoring program so successful and made it work really, really well. So thank you to all. I put the motion, two motions. All those in favour, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Against, carried. As far as I know, that concludes the meeting. Thank you very much, everyone. Thank you.